Alabama currently have felony bans on health care pending. So if those bills pass in Alabama, there's one vote left in the House. In Idaho, it has to make it to the Senate. These are bills that also would be similarly catastrophic for trans people. And we already have such a bill that thankfully we enjoined in Arkansas, but our litigation continues there. And of course, there's dozens of bills across the country still pending.
And specifically in Idaho, what you are most concerned about happening there?
You know, I'm concerned that this bill passes and all care is cut off. And not only is it cut off, that bill would make it a felony with potential life imprisonment, not only to treat people in state, but to take someone out of state to get the treatment. What are families supposed to do? And as a parent, I simply cannot imagine what it must feel like to face criminal prosecution to try to keep your kid alive.
And how many bills like this have been introduced around the country, Chase?
We are facing a context now where over 35 states have introduced bills targeting transgender young people. Thankfully, we are able to stop some of them, but we are continuing to fight to the very end of these legislative sessions because there is an aggressive push to move these quickly through state legislatures.
Well, we want to get into the details of these, so we're going to do part two of our discussion with you right now. Chase Strangio, Deputy Director for Trans Justice with the ACLU.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Listeners out there, I am Paul Roland, the host of this program, Wednesday Talk Radio. Be with you for the next hour. That was James Edmund Greeley, Warm Springs Native American flutist from his CD, Before America, with Celilo Koop. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, Celilo, on the 65th anniversary coming up tomorrow of the flooding of Celilo Falls for at least 10,000 years, the most important salmon fishery and trading center for indigenous people of the Columbia River Basin and the greater Pacific Northwest. An unimaginable tragedy happened to the people of the region at that time. And we are going to be speaking about that. There's an event coming up tomorrow. We'll be talking about it at Blue Lake Park. And to talk about it, both the event and the flooding of Celilo Falls, we've got two guests. Both organizers of this event, Erilyn Stiwer is a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs with Celilo and Wasco ancestry. She studied for a PhD and was a professor at the Heritage University at Toppenish Washington School of Business. She now owns and runs the Red Sky Trading Post at Warm Springs and is a master beadwork artist who has received two national awards from the Native Arts and Culture Foundation and the Burke Museum Bill Holmes Center. Our other guest is Sean Cruz, who is founder and executive director of the Jim Pepper Native Arts Council, which is sponsoring the Celilo event tomorrow, and which organizes an annual music festival honoring the great Native American musician, saxophonist Jim Pepper, who lived in Portland for many, many years and is well known to the people of Portland. Sean Cruz also served as Oregon State Senator Avel Louise Gordley's legislative staff for 6 years until her retirement in 2008. The seeds for his organization and this event were sown in Senator Gordley's office during that time, and we'll find out about that. So good morning, both Sean and Erilyn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to both of you. So let's start out. I know, Erilyn, you have within your family strong memories of Celilo Falls. So you have you're very close to that. So you have a lot to speak about that. I want to start though with Sean. I just want to get the something about this event tomorrow out. So maybe you could just talk about how you came to be organizing these kind of events.
Well, it wasn't my original plan, but like I said, the seeds of this organization were sown in the 2005 legislative session in Senator Gordley's office with her sponsorship of the Senate resolution honoring the life and achievements of Jim Pepper. And then in the 07 legislative session when she sponsored the two Celilo bills. And this event marks confluence of those events, the legislation that was created then, beginning 17 years ago. And we are this year celebrating our 10th year of exploring Jim Pepper's legacy with artists like James Edmund Greeley. He's part of our families, performed at a number of our events. And he's a Native American Awards-winning flutist. And the piece that you just listened to won the best traditional recording, NAMI, 4 or 5 years ago. And very appropriately titled Before America. And we applied for a Metro Placemaking Grant in the fall. And our proposal was that we would produce an event in each of up to 8 different metro parks and major areas. And in our proposal, we said that we are going to work to raise awareness of Celilo. And this March 10th event tomorrow marks the 65th year of the actual day that Celilo Falls was flooded. 1957, and that's how we're opening up our series and everything else we're going to do this year.
Well, great. We're looking forward to it, and it looks like it's actually going to be a sunny day tomorrow. So that's looking up.
It should be just like today. Yeah.
Yeah, and Blue Lake Park out in Fairview, you know, just east of Portland, maybe we can talk a little bit about the venue and the lineup that there's going to be. Maybe just start out before we talk about Celilo Falls, the reason for this event. Just so you know, anybody who's just tuning in now might not be staying with. So what's the day going to look like tomorrow?
Well, Arlen, you want to talk about that?
Okay, yes. At 9 o'clock, we will have a horse parade, and so the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission tribes affiliated with Sintawana, the big river, is the Warm Springs, the Yakima, the Umatilla, and the Nez Perce, and further north are the Colville. And so... The Nez Perce are known for the Appaloosa horses. Umatilla are known for their Cayuse horses. And we will have traditional regalia presented with the horse parade at 9 a.m. And then at 9:30 or so, we'll have the color guard posting the colors, veterans again from the river tribes, and any veterans are welcome to join us. All veterans are welcome, and American Legion and auxiliary posts are also welcome to join in that ceremony. And then we'll be close to the lake for Washut services, which is our kind of praying for the day with song and dance in our traditional manner that we have carried on for 12,000 years. And we even have a song that we sing that speaks of the great flood, which occurred 12,000 years ago. So our history is intact. And the river tribes will be doing our ceremony. We will not allow any cameras or recording during that portion of the day. And then we'll have either two or four canoes arriving in the lake, and chief of the Salila village, Olson Mianis Jr., will welcome the canoes to the land in our manner. And then we'll have a salmon bake with deer stew, and the Caldwells will bring in moose for the stew. And then in the afternoon will be some speakers, but mixed in there, our MC, Thomas Morning Owl of Umatilla, will allow some of the tribal contemporary entertainers, such as James Greeley, who you were playing the flute earlier, and Hunter Nowak with his grand piano will be included. Andre Picard of Nez Perce, and others from the tribes that are standing by to fit in the schedule as needed. And we will have vendors. Right now there's like 30 to 40 vendors that are going to be selling their goods at the gathering, and we're excited because of the COVID. We haven't had any gatherings. There's been, unfortunately, a lot of funerals, and it's just a scary time. So we're going to be outside practicing our healthy manner to stay safe, and we will be sharing our experiences about what had occurred. Among the speakers, Chief Olson Mianis Jr., there will be the tribal leaders from each of the reservations, and there will be Linda Mianis, who will speak about her experiences. She just wrote a book recently. And then Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission Executive Director and Chairman of Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, Quincy Ellenwood from Nez Perce, will be speaking. And then we'll have Patsy Whitefoot from the Confluence to introduce the keynote speaker, Elizabeth Woody, the former Oregon Poet Laureate. And we have hundreds of volunteers behind the scenes to make this happen. We treasure what we once had, and to gather and speak about those memories. My grandparents explained to me that our family fished on the big island at Salila Falls, and there's names for all of that. Atim is the sound of the falls. We lost that sound 65 years ago, and so we're this is a part of our healing process to get together and to share with one another and to sing and pray. And so it's going to be, I think, an eye-opener for non-natives that have never heard our stories coming from directly from the people that were alive and got to fish there. They got to go across in the cable at the falls, and we're so proud to share with people to look it up, Celilo Falls, C-E-L-I-L-O Falls. And on Facebook, Sean Cruz and I have a page called Friends of Celilo, and we've been doing that for maybe 10, 12 years, and we have thousands of followers that look at our videos and our stories on Facebook. And so we're expecting to feed anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people tomorrow.
Thank you for that, Arlen. I second your enthusiasm for actually being able to meet together in public. I think I've been to maybe one or two public events in the last 2 years. It's really quite extraordinary. I don't think we should get too optimistic. You know, who knows what might come our way, but it's nice to get out and meet in public again. And this is a really wonderful opportunity, and for people to learn about the real history of this place, not that far up the river from where this event will be. And I just want to continue along what you started to talk about. You talked about your family having a particular fishing spot. You want to just describe, I imagine people who are listening have seen photos, but again, look it up. I included a link to the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission article on Celilo, but there's Wikipedia, there's Oregon Encyclopedia, there's books written on it, but the photos are just staggering to see, just to imagine that just completely was erased. And so talk about how did it work? How did the fishing work there? People came from hundreds of miles away to fish there, and there were designated spots for different families, right?
Exactly. And we still know the names of them in our language. Each of the families, there's hundreds of families that fish there. So it was like the Wall Street of America, where we traded. Our people are wealthy with salmon. I've looked at some of the data. Some of the data said 16,000 a day, and there's artists that painted the salmon nearly on top of each other. I've seen those photos as well, and collected those photos, and remembering what we once had. And I in my research, the missionaries arrived and they saw the trading among our people with various food items. The men had their items, and the women had their items as well, trading along the river, and a lot of salmon, but also other tools and clothing items, beadwork and such. And when the missionaries arrived, they saw the women amongst the men doing business, and they said, "Those women are haughty. Who are they to be doing business?" And so I always like to say, as a businesswoman, it's in my DNA to be along the travel route, selling my goods.
Yeah, we could talk about that too, what you're doing there out at Warm Springs. And maybe we can also talk about the fact that finally looks like... I'm blanking on the name of the resort. Please tell me, what's the
Canita.
Canita. I know it well. I've been there. So Canita has opened up. So there's a lot to talk about. We're mainly talking about the 65th anniversary of the flooding of Celilo. And I happened on March 10th, 1957, 65 years ago tomorrow, and we've been talking about the event commemorating that. And my two guests are Sean Cruz, who again is head of the Jim Pepper Native Arts Council, which puts on the Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival every year. And I'll give him the opportunity to talk a little about that, maybe what's coming up this year. and with Arlen. I'm sorry, pronounce your last name for me.
Stwyer.
And who's lives out at Warm Springs, a member of the Confederated Tribes there. The Celilo people say is the longest continuously inhabited village site, I believe, in North America. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Correct. Yes.
You can help clarify something for me. My understanding was that when they flooded Celilo Falls, they also flooded part of the original village. My understanding was forced them to move off the village site, and then now it's people can see it, the big longhouse, the beautiful longhouse that was built, 20, 25 years ago, whenever that was, can see it from 84. And so it's on this other side of the river from both the railroad tracks and the highway. And that when they forced them to move, and tell me if I'm right or wrong here, they said it was all going to be flooded, but actually the site wasn't completely flooded, and now it's actually like a state park. Is that correct?
Not really.
No? Okay.
Part of the village was bulldozed when they flooded Celilo Falls during that process there. But when you go out there and you can see the village where it stands today isn't more than 100 yards from the falls. And it is absurd to think that the tribes didn't live there. That didn't live there where they are now, and didn't live on, and they lived on both sides of the river. And it's a vast archaeological site out there. So to describe the village as consisting of, you know, where the houses happen to be located when the falls were flooded, and therefore the village is at a different site, is absolutely absurd.
I guess I didn't mean, I guess what I was pointing at, thank you for that, and I guess that does, I can understand it, there's people living in a whole wide area there, and that included what is the currently Celilo Village. I guess what I was pointing at was I was outraged by the idea that they actually made it into a park when that actually could still be inhabited, Celilo Village could actually exist where the park is now, right?
Well, it's dry land, yeah, for sure. But right there next to that, cutting through that park is a double railroad track, and then you have I-84, and then you have another railroad track that passes 50 feet away from the village homes.
That's a part of our message. For the people is letting people know that we are still going through a lot of challenges and one of the messages I've asked Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission is to share about today's work that we're doing for our fishing rights, the technology, the research, the litigation. It continues to go forward as we're dealing with climate change, the warm weather impacts that's changing the flows of our fishing sites, the sacred sites that were with us forever are still in our mind. We're still trying to figure out how we can be in mind of restoration of that for the salmon. And the great wealth, and we still have the salmon feast every year. Our chief will determine the date when the first salmon will be caught, and we get together every year at Celilo and continue our way of life. And I don't think a lot of people understand just what our ancestors who possessed that property and the wealth lost in the on this entire loss of the Celilo Falls. My father, the treaty fisherman, our tribal council had hired him to fish at the 22 sites that we can still fish under our treaty along the Ntawana, what you call the Columbia River. We call Ntawana Big River in our language. And unfortunately, the name of the river is after Christopher Columbus, and so we don't honor that at all. It's Ntawana to us.
Has there been any speaking? I'll let you continue, but you know, there's been this big push to relook at you know, Confederate statues. Even statues of Columbus have been torn down, and there's a whole relooking at the history of colonization. Have you had any discussions? Have you heard any discussions about, you know, asking to rename the river? It's a kind of a big job, I guess.
I think because today's Biden administration has appointed a couple of river people to the Jamie Pinkham is next first, with the Army Corps of Engineers, and Charles Sands is Umatilla with the National Parks, and you have Deb Hyland with the Department of Interior. So I think we've got a chance to have more support than in the past to have a discussion. It's in the hands of the people, the leaders that you'll see tomorrow. They will have the say-so on this. Working together is what it's going to take. So we're just putting our feet in the water, trying to get discussion started about it. And I look back on, again, my dad and what happened when he was fishing. He got arrested every single time at 22 sites for fishing there. Our tribal attorneys did get him out, and he was such a rebel maverick. He was perfect for the job. It was a badge of honor for him to get arrested at our sites, and he knew he was going to get out of jail. And I worked on the river as a college student, protecting the salmon that were in the pickups. We had good fishing back in the 70s, and it's dwindled a lot today. I mean, it's really sad. And so in my lifetime experience, you know, I have been at that river fishing in our treaty fishing sites, which we restored by law, you know, by Judge Baloney, I believe back in the, how am I say, the 70s? I don't remember, but I was in college in the 80s and helped my family with the treaty fishing rights. And again, it was our way of continuing the sacred food that we have, that have taken care of us for 12,000 years.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about that, the history of the fishing rights struggle, really major part of Native American struggles overall in the United States that probably a lot of people don't know, especially younger people don't know much about. I do want to remind people that we are in our winter membership drive, and it's going for another week. So if you haven't given yet, this is your opportunity right now to support the kind of programming you're hearing right now on Wednesday Talk Radio, which is part of the Morning Public Affairs, part of the talk shows from 8 to 9 a.m. weekday mornings. I'm Paul Rowland. I host the Wednesday Talk Radio show, and I have a variety of programs, including this one talking about the history of fishing, the history of Celilo, Celilo Falls, Celilo Village, the flooding of Celilo Falls 65 years ago. So there's a number of ways you can contribute to the station, which is a listener-sponsored station, a membership-driven station, kboo.fm/give. You can go there right now and click on Donate in the mobile app if you have one. Or you can text KBOO to 44321. on your mobile device. That's just text KBOO to 44321. You can also do it the old-fashioned way by mailing in your check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Yeah, we've been around for 52 years, and we specialize in giving you the news that you're not likely to get elsewhere. So please contribute if you haven't done so. You only have a week left to do it. And I am talking with Sean Cruz and Arlen Steuer, and we're talking about Celilo Falls. So Jim, I know you were, Sean, sorry. Not Jim Page. I know, Sean, you have been involved in KBOO in the past, so I'm sure you appreciate what KBOO does for the community.
I admit I'm a former board member.
You confess, huh?
I do. I'll own up to that.
But seriously, yeah. I mean, do you get regularly invited on to other radio stations, other media outlets like KBOO does? I mean, KBOO is a unique outlet for a variety of community voices, marginalized voices.
Oh, yeah, it's an important voice for sure.
And before we get back to the history of the fishing rights, I do want to also invite people to call in 503-231-8187 if you have any comments or questions for my guests. We're kind of limited in our ability to take calls because we have our two guests are on the phones with our somewhat antiquated phone system, which we're hoping to upgrade with your help if you contribute to our station. That would be one of the things it might go to. 503-231-8187. So yeah, Jim, before we go back again to the rich and important history of the struggle to maintain fishing rights, talk a little bit about some of the things you do. The Jim Page, you could talk about Jim Pepper himself, Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival.
Well, we celebrate Jim Pepper's legacy, and our mission as an organization, the Jim Pepper Native Arts Council, excuse me, is to improve access to culturally relevant music education for Native American students in Jim Pepper's name and reflecting the educational legacy of his mother, Floyd Pepper. That's our mission. So our permanent home is on the campus of Park Rose High School in Northeast Portland, in the neighborhood where Jim grew up, went to school and that sort of thing. But this is our permanent home, and in keeping with our educational mission. But in the past couple of years since COVID, we have moved to a hybrid model where most of our events have been without in-person audiences. We film everything that we do. We have a YouTube channel, Jim Pepper Native Arts Council or Festival YouTube channel, and all of our videos are in the Open Signal Community Media System. Mm-hmm. So they come up just like earlier this morning. Four of our videos were aired on Open Signal, So this year is our 10th year of celebrating the legacy, and we're just kind of celebrating all year. And it's also 30 years since Jim Pepper walked on. So
who was Jim Pepper, first of all, for those who may not be familiar?
He was a member of the Kaw and Muscogee Creek Nations, and born in Salem at a time when both of his parents were teachers at Chamawa Indian School in Salem. And his family moved to Vanport. His father Gilbert got work there at the shipyard, but they were flooded out at Vanport with everybody else in 1948. And then they moved to Park Rose, actually to the house I live in 1950. And they were here for about 50 years. And yeah, so there's that part of it.
And he was a great saxophonist. He was a big part in the what they called the free jazz movement of the 60s, yeah.
Oh, he was absolutely legendary, and he was far better known away from Oregon and away from Portland than he is in his own hometown, absolutely, and in Europe, well remembered, and he's the only Oregon musician whose instrument is in a glass case in the Smithsonian Museum, National Museum of the American Indian. Every now and then, somebody visits over there and sends me a photograph. And that's where his saxophone is, mm-hmm. in glass case.
So again, we're talking about the event tomorrow, which your organization, the Jim Pepper Native Arts Council, is sponsoring, which is at Blue Lake Park. Maybe you can just describe how people can get there.
Well, they can find their way to Blue Lake Park. It's in Fairview, and what I want your audience to understand is a little bit more about the background of Celilo and the legislation that was passed 15 years ago on the 50th anniversary of the flooding of the falls. And I want to read to you the Senate resolution that was sponsored by Senator Gordley and then Speaker of the House Jeff Merkley. And during that session, several delegations from the Columbia River tribes and the Wyom people at Celilo Village came to the Capitol to meet with Senator Gordley. They had a long-standing good relations, and asked her to sponsor the two Celilo bills. And so this is the language that emerged from those meetings. And this is the Senate resolution. It reads, whereas Wyom, the Great Falls in Chihuahua, known to us as Celilo Falls of the Columbia River, thundered for millennia in the spiritual heart of the Northwest and was a natural wonder of the world. And whereas, throughout the millennia, Celilo Falls was the primary place where native people caught the giant Chinook, blueback, and coho salmon that struggled upstream through the rocky barrier of tumbling waters and swift, narrow channels. The native people's record of habitation proves Wyom to be one of the longest continuously inhabited communities on this continent. And whereas for its thousands of years of human civilization, Wyom was one of the world's great marketplaces, and a half dozen tribes had permanent villages near the falls where some 5,000 people would gather to trade, feast, and participate in games and religious ceremonies. And whereas the multitudes of salmon caught at Celilo Falls helped make the lower Columbia River among the wealthiest places in what is now the United States, and fostered a blossoming of rock art culminating in the petroglyph Sagalalo, or She Who Watches, and other great works. And whereas the images of the dip netters reaching from their vibrating scaffolds into the rolling river are an icon of the native Northwest. And whereas on March 10th, 1957, the waters held back by the Dalles Dam flooded and silenced the awesome and sacred roar of Celilo Falls, severing a great spiritual connection between the Creator, Mother Earth, and the native peoples of Oregon. And whereas the silence of the dead falls is rivaled only by the silence in the hearts of the elders who remember the thunder of the falls and the vibrant communities struck down by the dam. And whereas the tribes of the Columbia River and the people of Celilo Village will hold a memorial for Celilo Falls on March 10th, 2007. Now, therefore, and all these whereases, these are all statements of facts that, you know, resolutions have no force of law. They don't compel anybody to do anything, but they are statements of facts and statements of where the legislative assembly is on a given issue. And what is in that language is that there were multiple permanent villages near the falls.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple permanent villages near the falls. And those were all destroyed.
Yes. And in the 1950s...
Go ahead.
In the 1950s, the federal government constructed several dams on the Mid-Columbia, abrogating the treaty obligations, ignoring the sovereign status of the Salila Wayampum, the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Yakima Nation, the Umatilla Tribe, and the Nez Perce Tribes. Just think about, Yakima Nation has 14 bands, Warm Springs has 3, Umatilla has 3, and so you're talking about a lot of river people, and we strive to help our salmon to endure the hydro dams, the agriculture, the industrial development, the pollution, and coal trains. And the only reason the falls are continuing to be flooded is to facilitate the commercial industrial barge traffic. A few
That's
years
right.
ago, I want to say seven or eight years ago, the barge traffic was closed for 4 months to undergo over $50 million in taxpayer-subsidized repairs. And there's only 2 barges a day on that river. And it's got the huge publicly funded subsidies degrading our salmon habitat and other lost costs.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of research on the Dalles, Oregon, our land, and Google is developing and investing billions of dollars there. But I chat with children in Oregon, those who come by my store as guests, and I ask them, have you heard of Celilo? Hardly any of them know what I'm talking about.
So you mentioned Google. That's another subject I need to do a program on. They've actually applied to expand. They've got a data center. There's at least a couple data centers already, and they want to build one or two more, which use an unknown amount of water. And they actually went to court to prevent, the Dalles City Council went to court to prevent that information from being made public, because they don't want people to know how much water they're using. And that's I know you're obviously familiar with the fight to stop the Nestle water bottling plant in Cascade Locks a few years ago, which was a big water quality issue. And this seems like this should be just as big an issue. Is that, do you know where that's at right now?
A lot of that discussion is just not public. There's really no way to know, you know, what's going on. And but back to the barging, the key to the Celilo issue right now is barging. It's not hydropower generated by the Dalles Dam is not the reason that the falls are flooded or were flooded. The falls are flooded so that to smooth the river out for barging to reach all the way to the John Day Dam. And that's why Celilo Falls is flooded. And in the 1950s, very consistent with federal and state policy was driving Indians off of Indian land, either to a reservation or into poverty in the cities. That was the plan. That's what is what happened. And they promised, the federals promised the tribes that they would build replacement housing for the housing that they tore down in the process of building the dam at the Dalles, and which they never intended to fulfill because they weren't doing that in the 1950s. And so there was the other Celilo bill that passed in the 2007 legislative session. But actually, hold on 1 second, I didn't finish with the resolution. I gave you all the whereases, but not the therefore. And the therefore after all those beautiful whereases, the therefore is, be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon, that we, the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly, mourn the flooding of Celilo Falls and recognize the falls' great importance to the native peoples of Oregon in providing sustenance from the salmon and a gathering place for all tribes, and agree to observe a moment of silence on March 10th, 2007. That is all the action that the resolution called for. And it's so ironic because there were 65 years of silence, and this just added another minute on top of that.
So I'm speaking with Sean Cruz, who you just heard, and Arlen Stwyer, and we're talking about an event tomorrow to commemorate 65 years of the flooding of Celilo Falls and a number of village sites there. Arlen, I just want to go back to you and carry on with that conversation about the fishing rights issue, and just setting the stage. Actually, the Bonneville Dam is what kind of kicked things off in 1938 and flooded. You mentioned fishing sites. It actually flooded a whole bunch of villages and fishing sites along the Inchewana Columbia River below the Dalles Dam. And those were, the Army Corps of Engineers promised to rebuild, I think it was like 22 what they called in lieu sites, in lieu of the sites that were flooded, and only a relatively small portion of those actually did, and they never really maintained them. There's been a big fight over that. Back in the 80s, there was a big fight, the whole salmon scam, undercover FBI operation targeting native fishing people. And they also targeted those in lieu sites for eviction. And a number of those battles were won. They stopped the evictions. And there's been some, I know that, I think there's been a couple of added in lieu sites. So there's been a little bit of progress. But so that you're talking about your father. So is that the kind of thing that he was involved in, that whole, you know, when was he involved in the fishing rights struggle, going back to like to the 60s?
Yes, the 60s, 70s, and early 80s is when he was hired by our tribal officials. The leaders asked him to go and fish there and to challenge the state agencies and anyone that was going to dare to what you're talking about, remove us. And so I was a college student, and I was hired by my dad and two uncles to watch our equipment. People were very jealous, and they were destroying our boats and our pickups and stealing the salmon. If you can imagine a salmon in the totes, were hundreds of pounds of fish in the back of a pickup.
So there's white people who are actively sabotaging native fishing people, right?
Yes, we were in conflict with another family in our tribal affairs, and we were in conflict with the sports fishermen. They hated us, and so I was this is crazy, but I was taught how to shoot a pistol by my dad. I went hunting with my dad all the time on horseback, and one day he took me to the range and started teaching me how to shoot a pistol, and I just thought, okay, we did the bow hunting and we've done with the rifles, now I got a pistol, I don't know why. And he made me sit in the pickup at nighttime on weekends when I was not at college and watch the equipment at the docks, and I had a spotlight, and so anybody that came along, I was to shine the light right at them because they couldn't see me, and flash my pistol at them and make them go away. And so only once did three men come and open up the tote and peek at the salmon and make remarks about it. I flashed a light at them, and I made my voice as low as I can to sound like a man to ask them what they were doing. And they left. They said, "We're admiring your salmon," and they left. But that was how challenging it was. And I was with my dad once when we were arrested, and I was just in the pickup waiting. waiting for him and my uncles to return, and they got arrested, and then they came to arrest me, and my dad said, she's a college student, do not touch her, and he pulled away from them and protected me, and I didn't get arrested, but it was close.
Yeah, no, that's just an incredible history. People really don't know how hot and heavy the conflict was, and how vicious the anti-Native sentiments ran along the river, well, throughout the country, throughout the Pacific Northwest, and things mm-hmm. have calmed down quite a bit since then. But that whole history, and I came on the scene in 85 and actually got involved with the with that, wrote a bunch of articles for the Alliance newspaper, and you probably remember the Columbia River Defense Project that Wilbur Slokish ended up taking mm-hmm. over. And but yeah, it was a really important time. It's been ongoing, obviously, you know, it's hundreds of years, and especially since the building of the dams. But so, you know, the event is called Celilo, Past, Present, and Future. We've talked a fair amount about the past, and we're talking about the present. I know there's, you know, discussions of tearing down the four Snake River dams. I know there was an idea that was floated to, you know, symbolically lower the water behind the Dalles Dam to reveal the falls for a time. I met with a mixed reception. But so is there active discussions to, you know, to do something about the Dalles Dam?
Well, I'm sure there's always active discussions about the Dalles Dam and the lower four Snake River dams. But as for anything that's moving the needle in that direction, I'm not aware of anything.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing
in about 2008, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, our tribes had negotiations with Bonneville Power Administration about restoration of our fishing sites, and so we did a settlement with Bonneville Power to do major improvement of our salmon restoration land and water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, just the Columbia River, the existence of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission itself is an almost unprecedented step, where the came, you talked about the Bologna decision back in the, I think the 70s, which fought, there was the Bolt decision in Washington State, and then the Bologna decision followed that in Oregon, which granted the treaty tribes 50% of the allowable catch in the, what they then became what they call Treaty 6, the Zone 6, the treaty fishery above Bonneville. Anyway, and that led to the creation of the Intertribal Fish Commission and gave the treaty tribes an actual role in formal policy decision stuff, which was a major step, and also helped lead to the creation of some of the hatcheries, which have helped a lot reestablish some of the runs. Although, you know, now with climate change and continued habitat degradation, you know, it's a continual fight. Anyway, I'm not sure where I was going with that. We only have about 5 minutes left. Nobody's called up. I just want to give people one more chance, 503-231-8187. Anyway, Arlen, if you want to respond to anything I said, or we can get back to some of the schedule. I did have a poem from Elizabeth Woody, if you want to hear that. She's a keynote speaker tomorrow.
That would be beautiful.
Okay, well, let's just go to that, if you have that queued up. My board operator time. Not sure the sound quality. I hope it's good enough. But this is her talking about Celilo.
One of her favorite poems is about David So Happy and She Who Watches. And David So Happy was this religious leader who fished along the Columbia River and was a real spiritual leader and who believed in practicing the old ways.
She Who Watches, the names are prayer. For David So Happy, April 25th, 1925 to May 7th, 1991. My humanness is an embellished tongue. The bell, a yellow mouth of September's moon, beats outward. She speaks for all the names that clang in memorial. There is Celilo, dispossessed, the village of neglect and bad structure. The falls are faint rocks and rippled in the placid lake of backwaters. With a sad stone grief and wisdom, I overlook the railroad, the tight bands rail along the whirls of the Columbia. Drowning is a sensation fishermen and their wives know of. Men who fished son after father. There are drownings in the dalles, hanging in jails, and off-reservation suicide towns. A strange land awaits the fishermen, as it had for the Nez Perce, the Navajo, the Cheyenne, those who wailed in the long walks, keen open the graves of their families, the dead children, my children, with names handed down and unused. Nimiku, Dene, Tzitzitzas, the people, pure in emergence. The immense mother is crying, human beings. The words are tremors in the ribcage of hills. The consumption of loneliness binds us. Children lie on the railroad tracks to die from the wail of night and spirits. I watch for the rushing head of chaos, and flat hands grope from the cattle cars, clamor in the swift, fresh air. A sky is clicking through the regular slats. The tail whips the dusty battles of the Indian Wars, unsettling itself, nude and raw. Celilo Falls sank unwillingly in the new trading, and everyone dissolved from the fall.
I'm not sure what there is to say after that. Any responses?
It's beautiful.
And she's going to be, as you all said, the former poet laureate of Oregon, and award-winning poet, Navajo, Warm Springs, and others, tribal background, and a real treasure. And we only have a couple minutes left, and we have we have a caller, Mike, just if you can make it like 15 seconds, but we got to get off the air here pretty soon. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, KBOO. There's a little bit of good news. Any time I get any, I hear anybody talking about fish or sporties or native fishing rights and limits and all that stuff, I pose the question: if we didn't years ago?
Okay, we don't have time for a long thing. We got to go. Sorry, Mike.
Anyway, my point is.
Sorry about that. So again, Sean and Arlen, tomorrow starting at 9 a.m., I'm going to just go real quick through the morning schedule and into the afternoon.
Yes, sure. 9 o'clock, horse parade, and the people will have our traditional regalia, and we are showing that we are still here, wearing our finest. And dressing our Appaloosa and Cayuse horses and what have you. And royalty will be present, tribal leaders, other dignitaries. We have the veterans will be posting the colors, and they're on their way now, all the way from Caldwell, Yakima, Idaho, and Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon. All the veterans are going to arrive and participate, and then after that will be our traditional wash-up services, and that is our sacred ceremony of prayer and gratitude and healing, and then the canoes will arrive, and So historically, that was our means of travel, and our chief of the Celilo will welcome them to the land. And this is the land of the Chinook people, and we honor that, whose original land that we will be having the services.
Okay, sorry, Arlen. We actually have to run. So that's tomorrow at Blue Lake Park in Fairview, Oregon. Be there and meet the two people, if you maybe, and check out a really amazing event tomorrow. Thank you so much, Arlen and Sean. And this is Paul Rowland with KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio.
Thanks, Paul.
Many years have passed, many seasons gone, but when I closed my eyes, Celilo Falls lives on. The river's in my blood, my life is in the stream. Here you call my name.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
Right beside the road, a memory to keep. The river's in my blood.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings